Attacks on private equity hurt Mitt Romney in South Carolina. We'll get a defense of the industry from a private equity leader.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The exit polling from South Carolina shows the upset victory by Newt Gingrich over the weekend is thanks in part to a new campaign narrative by Gingrich and his supporters, a narrative that attacks Mitt Romney's time at the private equity firm Bain Capital.
Mitt Romney became CEO of Bain Capital the day the company was formed. His mission? To reap massive rewards for himself and his investors.
Mitt Romney, them guys, they don't care who I am.
Well, Mitt Romney's campaign is already running an ad in Florida to counter that narrative and highlight the economic upsides of private equity. We are going to take the politics out of it for a moment and focus on the industry. Adam Blumenthal is the founder and managing partner of the private equity firm Blue Wolf, and he's with us now from New York. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, let's start with what it is that you do, which has come under attack recently. Describe to me what it is that a private equity guy like yourself does.
Well, Jeremy, what we do is look for companies which have a complicated set of problems that maybe they have gotten out of touch with their market or they're underperforming in some other way. And we use capital, which pension funds primarily have entrusted to us, mixed with our own money. And we buy those companies and we work over a 3 to 5 to 7 year period of time to try to turn them around, have the companies become more valuable, and ultimately we sell them to somebody who will be a long-term owner.
And do you care in that process if the company ultimately survives or not?
We care very much. Usually the companies that our firm buys, their long-term future is not at all certain when we get there. And what our business is and our goal is to make those companies grow, make them thrive, fix their problems, and have them be long-term survivors.
It does seem that a lot of the criticism that's been directed at the private equity industry is because it seems some private equity people don't have employment in mind. They don't care if the company that comes out on the other end has 100 employees or 50.
Well, what any management team or what any set of owners really want to do is make the company grow, thrive, and be more valuable. In general, when you do that, employment grows, but not always. We sometimes get involved with companies which have had their sales fall in half and nobody's adjusted the employment. And the reality is you can't survive. And if you want to survive, you have to get things lined up.
Do we need private equity in this economy, or is it just something that speeds up the process of fixing companies that are not doing that well? Do we need it or not?
We do need it. Many companies that we've seen, they can't adapt to change quickly enough, or the short-term focus of quarterly earnings leads to an inability to make decisions that are important for the long run. And for companies in those kinds of situations, they'll never get fixed unless somebody like us gets involved and organizes things appropriately.
What do you make of the criticism being called vulture capitalist or barbarians even?
I think that it's easy to find examples of anything that any industry does that didn't work out well. I think the overwhelming reason that pension funds and universities and the sovereign wealth funds all over the world invest in private equity is we're able to, by focusing on very specific niches, make companies be worth more than they were before. In general, our economy is better because people are focused on doing that.
Adam Blumenthal is founder and managing partner with Blue Wolf Capital Partners, a private equity firm. Adam Blumenthal, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in overseas trading this morning, up 0.8% in Hong Kong, down about 0.3% right now in Frankfurt. The European Union has just adopted an oil embargo against Iran because of the country's nuclear ambitions. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow gained 96 points to close at 12,720. The index was up almost 300 points for the week.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Invest Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, a European location offering a workforce that's well-educated, smart, and driven. More at investni.com/invest. and by GoToMeeting by Citrix, bringing high-definition video conferencing to online meetings for face-to-face collaboration. More at GoToMeeting.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Today's the day the Chinese welcome the Year of the Dragon, which you'll probably notice if you live anywhere near a Chinatown. Those Chinatowns remain symbolically important to Chinese Americans, but not as many are calling them home, as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
The largest Chinese population in New York used to be in Manhattan's Chinatown. Now it's across the East River in Queens. The same thing is happening in Chinatowns from San Francisco to Seattle to Boston.
The importance of traditional Chinatown as residential neighborhoods has been declining for some time.
Wei Li is a professor of Asian American Studies and Geography at Arizona State University. She says nearly three-quarters of Chinese immigrants have come to the U.S. in the last two decades. The existing Chinatowns were too small to accommodate that growth. And, says Wei Li, there's been a socioeconomic shift in those immigrants, too.
Many of them are wealthy as well as armed with higher education degrees.
And want to buy a house in a good school district. So they head to the burbs. Wei Li says traditional Chinatowns still have a role catering to lower-income immigrants, older residents, and tourists. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And finally, to the place many of us spend a lot of our time, the office. Apparently, 25% of you find office work extremely boring. That's a study out of the United Kingdom that says that. It says office boredom is leading uninterested workers to guzzle coffee and munch on chocolate at an alarming rate. But if you find yourself bored at work, be careful what you wish for. Researchers say one quick way to curb that boredom is to give you more work to do. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
In the Philippines, the link between religion, birth control, and global hunger becomes pretty clear.
There will be doubling of the population, there will be overcrowding of people, there will be a survival of the fittest.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Our series Food for 9 Billion continues. That and the numbers from Wall Street as well, next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.